When I was a young one in high school, I learned about injustice and that people working together can actually change things.
Well, where were you in high school?
In New York State. And so I've been organizing ever since. I was in student politics, you know, in student government, in high school and college. I did legislative lobbying work, realized that that's not really where power is, our power is. And I started really doing nonviolent direct action in the early 80s around U.S. intervention in Central America.
Nicaragua,
El Salvador, Guatemala. And so that's really where I learned about civil disobedience and some of these alternative models that really generated in the model. A lot of it really came out of Spain during the anarchist movement in the late 1800s and early 1900s, the Grupos de Afinidad. So I did that, and then I've been in the labor movement. A lot of my work has been working in the U.S. labor movement, teaching people about direct action, taking over buildings, blocking streets. The Service Employees Union, the Justice for Janitors campaign. Justice for Janitors. Yes. Ken Loach just did a film called Bread and Roses that was just out in France about the janitors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bread and Roses, right?
Bread and Roses, it's called, about the janitors, yeah. So I did a lot of work. A lot of my work is about creating crisis, because I believe crisis is at the moment in which things can change and where those power can change.
And when did you start being involved in this anti-globalization movement?
I really got, it was sort of just leading up to Seattle. I was in the labor movement before doing, I mean, I was sort of like in the grassroots movement, then I went into labor in the 90s doing a lot of direct action. And then at Seattle, I said, I'm much more interested in helping to build this new movement.
But you were not in Seattle.
Yeah.
You were in Seattle?
Yeah, I did training there, some organizing
there,
some jail there.
What's the difference, in your opinion, between Seattle and Genoa?
I wouldn't say it's a difference between Seattle and Genoa. I'd say it's a difference between the histories and cultures of the countries.
Yeah.
In the U.S., we have a history of nonviolent civil disobedience, which was brought to us through Gandhi in South Africa and India, in the civil rights movement. And we have the women's movement, and a lot of movements came together that had some common history. In Europe and in Quebec, the history is not so much about nonviolent civil disobedience, but it's about mass uprisings, general strikes, right? Completely taking over and shutting cities down. I think we have to learn from each other. I mean, damn, I'd love to see a general strike in the United States, right? And I would love to see more understanding of the power of the strategy of nonviolence in terms of really changing stuff here. Because I believe when you have the free-for-all where we meet violence with militant tactics that escalate it, I don't think we can ever win, right? Because they just have more guns than we have. Right, so I mean, I think that it creates a situation where people get hurt. We don't really win political objectives. We become marginalized because that's what the media portrays, and our message gets lost. So it's not that I am like, it's not that I care that much, or I'm putting a philosophy. I just think strategically, it doesn't advance what we're doing. I would also say, sitting down doing a passive blockade in a place where you're not having an impact, and where the police come and beat you up, is equally unstrategic, right? And I think part of what's happened over the past 2 years is that you've had more militant people seeing passive people getting the shit kicked out of them, doing nothing, like, that's stupid. And then you see other people fighting, losing ground, and like, that doesn't work. I think what we need is this middle ground where we are being as militant as possible in a strategic way, where we expose their violence, and we are operating in ways where we keep our humanity and take care of each other, because that's the process of creating something new.
Where did this idea come from? The idea that wherever they will be, we'll follow them, we'll track them, them being?
I think it's just an instinct, it's intuition. People are rising up all over the world. This is not a phenomenon in Europe. Right? In South America, in India, in Asia, in Australia, like, people are rising up against, you know, the movements of the landless, blocking dams. People are, it's just growing, because I think that, for lack of a better, on a psychic level, we understand that this planet is being destroyed, and as people we are being crushed. And the space for life is getting smaller and smaller. And if we don't act now, we are all going to die. I mean, I think there's an urgency to it that people really feel that's creating momentum. We just have to be careful that the urgency doesn't make us skip good organizing, where we're building alliances, understanding oppression and how we can oppress each other, right? Where we're not taking the time to be strategic, just reacting, right? So much of what we do is react because that's what we learn, that's what we know. So we need to both be urgent and militant, but smart, and we need to organize. We need to, like, dialogue, think, create. So it's, again...
Are you afraid of violence tomorrow?
Yes. I know I'm terrified of what the police are going to do.
Yeah.
You know, not only did we see them use live ammunition in Gothenburg, but they shot and killed people in Papua West New Guinea. A week after Sweden, at a World Bank meeting, they killed 3 people and wounded 17 others.
Whereabouts, sorry?
In Papua West New Guinea.
New Guinea.
Yep, in New Guinea. And people don't seem to know that part, and I think if they did it, the fear would be even higher. Clearly, they want us to be afraid so that people don't come. Clearly, people are willing to act in courage and take risks. I am afraid of what the police will do, and I am afraid that there are some groups that are coming who are going to take their style of actions and bring them into other people's actions. If they want to do their own actions in their own place, rock on.
Yeah.
But when you get into other people's actions,
yeah.
I feel like that's where we begin to divide ourselves. And I can't help but think that when you understand how the state has operated for years, their surveillance, their provocation, infiltration, that the police will inevitably put people undercover that are going to create these divisions.
Yeah.
And whether these groups become tools of the state, knowingly or unknowingly. And I just really, I believe that we can engage them in dialogue. We've seen it in certain cities where we've encouraged them to not do that, and it's worked. But I don't know if that's been possible here.
You consider yourselves a real serious threat to corporate globalization, to global government. Do you think you frighten these guys who are in the port now?
You mean the movement?
Yeah, do you think that you guys, the movement, frightens the government?
Absolutely. Because they're building fences and they're using weapons against us. You know, so the question is why are they afraid? What are they afraid of? You know, your fear comes often from a sense of loss. What are you going to lose? Right? And they're worried they're going to lose power. They're going to lose control. They're going to lose access to resources, right? That they may have to give up their...
Lisa, but you really think you frightened George W. Bush? You really think he cares about what's happening here?
I do. I believe that they want us to think that what's happening is inevitable, that we have no power, right? They want us to think that this is just going to happen. We can't do anything about it. But you know what? We can, we have, we will. And the truth is, they are reacting to us more than we are reacting to them. They are on the run. We are on the rise. They are definitely afraid. And just like a trapped animal attacks, that's what you see happening. Because they know that they are not in control. This is very fluid right now, and we don't know where it's going to end up. And we're early. In the U.S., this movement against globalization has been going on for some time, right? But in the U.S., it really took hold as a movement at Seattle. So in the U.S., anyway, we're just barely in toddler stage of development, right? If you think of us sort of being born in Seattle, we're just a toddler. We've got many years ahead of us to build strength. So yeah, we're going to wage a serious challenge to them.
Can we continue our interview?
Yeah.
One of the things you said you
discovered. You should just be part of all this too.
You said you discovered injustice and the necessity to fight it when you're in high school. Is that some precise fact?
Not one that's important. When people are irresponsible in their power, I try and change that.
What is your activity in the USA?
This,
okay.
I'm a full-time organizer.
Yeah.
Mostly unpaid.
Okay.
Just one. Sorry.
I know you need to go with these guys.
Yeah. How do you see the future of this movement?
I'm hopeful. Because, you know, I think about change, it goes like this. You know, we always have to come back because as new people come in, we learn new lessons, but we're going forward. And I can't speak in Europe so much. I think the GSF has done a really good job of bringing together different groups and allowing NGOs to be part of direct action. Is it perfect? No. Is everybody in? No. In the U.S., we're trying to do that as well. In the U.S., I see more advancement in understanding issues of racism and white supremacy and patriarchy. Really, we're really struggling with these questions and looking at those power dynamics and how do we build. You know, in a democratic society, they say their greatest weapon is the pen. In a totalitarian society, it's the weapon or the sword, right? We have a very, in Europe and the U.S., it's a very hard environment to work in to create change because most people think that you have rights when in fact we really don't. And so it's just really hard. And so we're grappling with these questions and I think we're growing and there's and more momentum is building. So I'm hopeful.
How old are you?
40.
40? You were talking when during the group, you said that being in jail can be one of the most empowering experiences. Did this experience occur to you?
Oh yeah, I've been in jail a lot.
But
what's a lot for me?
Well, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I think we tried to count it. I think it's been like between 25 and 30 times, which is actually a lot.
Like one 2 days in a row or?
Four or five sometimes. I mean, I've been strip searched. I've been chained. I've been locked in cell. I mean, I've had different things
last
like that. Last time I was in jail actually was, it was in L.A. around some labor stuff. But it's empowering. Yeah, mostly. Well, it's empowering because for many people who come from a place of privilege, right? When you get put in jail, you lose some of your rights. I mean, you really lose your rights, and so you get to experience situations that a lot of people experience every day. Like a lot of communities of color and poor communities and working class communities have their rights violated on a daily basis, right? Where white middle class people don't. So when you go to jail, you get a taste of what it's like to have really, I don't want to say no power because I believe we have power, but to lose your rights completely. And it's very educational for them.
When was the first time? Have you been in jail?
Yeah.
When was the first time you were in jail?
83 or 84.
And it's true that you guys told me.
More or less, yeah.
Where were that?
In Seattle.
In Seattle?
Yeah.
After the demos.
Yeah, we were both arrested in the WTO demonstration. And
yeah.
Matt,